Hello, I'm Douglas Kretz, and this is Startup Stories. We're talking to the newest entrepreneurs working on the newest projects with help from Microsoft. And today I'm with Jordan, who is a co-founder of Buzz Referrals. I'm really happy to have you here,
but
I'd like for you to tell us a little bit about what Buzz Referrals is and then how you came up with it.
Yeah, so Buzz Referrals, we help female-focused brands target the right customers. So we have a network of publishers across mobile, across web, and across social. Mm-hmm. And we hone in on the demographics so they can really reach the right target audience. And then once we reach that audience, we help them activate that consumer. And that means getting them to share with friends and really spread the word.
Now, you focus on a particular audience, though. And it's for female-focused brands and other and moms, right? So mm-hmm. How did that happen? You're a dad. You know, how does a guy like you get fixated on this problem?
Good question, and one we get a lot. And it actually came from where we started. We've pivoted the company since we started 2 years ago. We started doing exclusively referral programs. So we would do referral programs for apartment complexes, auto dealerships, online companies. And what we saw with those referral programs is some did really well, some fell flat. And the ones that we tended to do really well with were brands like Sitter City and Angie's List and Babaco and Carter's Watch the Wear that all targeted moms. Right. And the finding there was that moms really like to talk and share with friends, and they also really value the opinion of someone that they know.
Yeah, you worked with for Angie's List.
I did.
You grew it from a pretty small number to about 80 different cities that it's in, right?
Is that not single-handedly?
No. But, okay. I was going to give it all the credit to you, but you could have taken it.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I was there when there was about 10 to 15 cities, and when I left, we were in at least 80, and the company had grown probably 4x and gone through a couple rounds of VC.
Right. Is there something? I guess what I'm trying to get at is that there was something very specific about referrals or recommendations or reviews. Was it the content part of it? Was it people? Was it the audience really knowing itself pretty well that kind of made growth? Was there anything going on in Angie's List that you thought could work well in this program?
I mean, the thing that I saw at Angie's List is that obviously customer acquisition was always at the forefront, one of the things we were trying to do, and everyone's trying to sell you on why you should be doing search with them or mobile with them or display with them. And at the end of the day, even though it was a home service company, it was the moms that were making a lot of the purchase decision about the remodeler or the plumber or whomever. And that holds true for a lot of companies that you might not think are mom-centric. Yeah. And then through this all, my co-founder and I both had kids at the exact same time. So we're dads, but we went through the whole challenge of finding the right stroller and the right daycare, and recommendations become very important.
So you must, as a dad, realize the effect of moms on the economy is pretty huge. Do you happen to know the size of the market that you're going after with this?
I mean, if you look at the size of the market in general, I should say females are expected to do 80% of all consumer purchases. They're not all moms, and we're not certainly going after that entire demographic. So I can't quite quantify it, but I can tell you that if you look at my household, I buy the vast, vast minority of anything, and that tends to be the stuff that's no fun, like car repair.
Wow, that's amazing. So you're really harnessing the decision-making power of women in the household for mostly consumer spending across the board.
That's right. We're pretty much B2C, not B2B.
And on the other side of that market, then, you're helping the brands, or are you helping the retailers, or who especially is the one getting help from that part of the deal?
Well, the first step is to target the moms, and that was the problem with referral programs initially, was that we'd get this good nucleus of customers to spread the word,
right.
But it's got a ceiling, and that's just predicated by how many people you have as a customer. Right. And so when we'd go to brands, we really needed a way to reach out farther than just their customer base, and that's why we built the network. The network started with just actually email publishers. So if BabyCenter had a big email database or a company like that, they would send an email blast out on behalf of our brands, and then it expanded to just web, mobile, display. Right. So once you can get that net cast a little wider, then the referral mechanisms make a lot more impact.
Right. So could you walk me through maybe like a case or an example of how this would work? From, I guess, I'm a mom. How would I experience this? And then maybe you can take me from the other side.
Sure. So I'll use Sitter City as an example. They were one of our first clients. So they've actually seen our company go through the whole evolution, starting with just referral programs.
Right.
Sitter City is a company that rates nannies and babysitters. So if you need a care provider, I think they also do senior care now, you can go to them, pay a subscription, and find someone good. So we started doing just the referral program with them. But the way we would typically work now is we would set up a offer, like a landing page. Maybe there's a coupon, maybe not. And we would go out to our network and say, any customer or any lead that you can bring to Sitter City will pay X amount. We then deploy that offer, test it, optimize it, get it to the right demographic based off the conversions, and we can track this all the whole way through.
Right.
And then once we do that, if someone signs up for Sitter City, about 3 days afterwards, they get an email that says, hey, thanks for joining. Share with a friend, and we have little sharing buttons, and get an Amazon gift card. So they share, and that all tracks through so that when someone actually buys, we then fulfill the gift card and take care of everything, soup to nuts.
Wow, so I'm getting it now. So you're informing new audiences of new offers that could be out there, but at the same time, you're enhancing the intelligence for the brand or the marketing agency that's working this program so they can be better at getting to the people they need to get to.
That's right.
Right. Wow, that's perfect. That's great. What's next in the roadmap for the company?
So the biggest thing we've got going on right now is a site called Bellafind. Bellafind's our own in-house platform to make that whole referral mechanism I described not only work better, but also work for companies that maybe don't have an online purchase event. Mm-hmm. So Sitter City and companies like that are great because you can say, all right, I referred a customer, they took out the credit card, they bought,
yeah.
Everyone's happy. If you are Kraft, you may not know, is this person a customer? How valuable was that sharing?
Right.
And so Bellafind is a totally built-in gamified platform where consumers can share, they can get points, they can exchange those points with for gift cards and really engage with the brands that they love.
Right. Can you take me back then to your own history? Because it seems like something must have been able to shape your ability to see these market opportunities. And I'm just wondering, were you working on other startups before? What was your kind of background? You got an MBA at Kellogg, is that correct?
Yeah.
Is there anything in your past that you think kind of shaped your perception of being able to find these kind of opportunities?
My time at Angie's List was obviously crucial. It was 5 years, the first 5 years right out of college. And at that time, everything was in its infancy. It was like 2003. So search, affiliates, I got to see that all kind of get built up at a company that was growing really quickly.
Right.
So I think that was huge in general. But when I came out of Kellogg, I went to a company called Next Wave Media that was an agency. Online agency, and got to see a lot of the stuff I didn't get to see around performance marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it wasn't so much, we worked with FTD Flowers and some kind of female-centric brands, but it was more about how that whole tracking works with kind of big data becoming a bigger thing, pixel tracking, cookies and privacy. That was stuff I didn't have exposure from. So the two sort of came together. I understood the need to reach a female target audience and how hard that could be, and then I understood the metrics and the tracking and kind of where that was going with data.
So what's happening in the marketing industry, do you think? I mean, what do you think, if you were to put on your 3-year lenses, with this kind of granular data, with the ability to put things into the cloud, to use databases, and the pervasiveness of mobile devices,
yeah.
How do you see this kind of market switching or transforming over that period?
Well, I mean, you said it. Mobile, I think, is probably the biggest game changer. And I'd say even more than social, because the thing with mobile, especially for a female audience, is we look at our traffic, and it's just over 50% is mobile, especially from our publisher base that aren't necessarily mobile. So if you have a blog, and they might be in our publisher base, over 50% of their readership is on the mobile device between soccer practice and whatever reading. And so brands that can't, don't have a responsive site yet, they don't have good landing pages for mobile, they're at a huge disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sometimes the thing we've got to do first. If a client comes to us, we've got to go through their mobile experience and just make sure it's up to par.
Got it. So I'm assuming that coming up, as you're working with Microsoft, there are some other things in the plan. Is there anything that you could tell other founders out there about who may be wary or maybe they don't understand how a business like yours can work with a really large enterprise like Microsoft to actually help you with your business?
I think number one is that big companies like Microsoft, forward-thinking companies, really want to help startups, and it's not just a marketing and PR pitch. Like they genuinely want to help them. And sometimes I think it's common to think, oh, what's in it for them? Like, why are they helping? I mean, these are people's jobs, is to figure out how they can help these startups. The resources are there,
right?
And sometimes I feel like companies, and we've been guilty of this, just don't fully leverage it.
Yeah.
So I would say just build a relationship and try out their products.
Right. And is there anything you're doing now with Microsoft that's actually been helpful for you?
Yeah. So we're, first we were on BizSpark,
yeah.
And then we switched from our hosting provider to Azure. We've been on Azure. I'm not kind of the tech brains of Buzz Referrals, but they've been very happy with it. And then now we're talking about how Microsoft and their relationships can help us get plugged into some of those CPG companies that are a little difficult for a startup to get into.
And other than the sort of Microsoft partnership and working with an enterprise, you've actually had a lot of history with startups. You worked for a startup, now you have your own. How do you grapple with that, I guess, the fear factor, the risks involved, and how do you, I mean, what are good coping strategies other founders might be able to work with?
Yeah, I mean, I guess step one is taking that step, which took me, I guess 8 years, it wasn't easy for me.
Oh.
So you know, I went to a lot of startups, but then when you go from being an early guy at a startup to being the founder, it's just a huge jump.
Yeah.
And I think the sooner you can do it, the better. And once you do it, it's great, but it's really tough to get there.
But what happens? Like, what happens when suddenly you're wearing that founder hat? What are you thinking about that was different?
Yeah. For me, thinking about too much. I tried to do everything myself at first.
Yeah.
Everything from our accounting to our HR to our strategy to our sales. And the sooner you can find good people to kind of take leadership on some of those things, the better. And I don't think, I'm certainly not great at that yet, but it's something that doesn't come naturally to people that have always sort of gotten their priorities set for them by the boss.
Yeah.
And now you've got everything in front of you and you've got to do the priority setting and figure out what makes sense strategically for me to do.
What gives you the confidence that you can actually make those decisions? Is it actually having those people? Or is it the fact that you have a product and you can see what it does? I mean, what is it?
To be honest, the confidence is probably also the ignorance sometimes. Just I don't know what I don't know and foolhardily go ahead. But I think having really good people on your team is the most important. I've got a great co-founder, we've got a good team, and being able to trust those people and say, run with it.
Got it. Well, we look forward to seeing you grow, and we'll have to kind of stay in touch because I'd love to see how this thing blows up.
Awesome.
Thanks in the good way.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome.